This session's a little unique for us. We were asked to give our story, and when they called me about it, Briley was going to get to come with me, and I said, would you mind if my daughter shares her perspective also? Because I get a lot of questions after my story, how did this affect your kids? How did it affect your family? And I thought, it'd be kind of fun to let her share in that. And they have really been precious in honoring her and putting her up there. And she's like, Mom, I don't even know what I'm up there doing. But it's touched my heart to see them honor her like that. So you're going to hear her side. So I'm going to start with my side of the story. And then she's going to share her side of the story. And her biggest concern right now is that I keep an eye on the clock. She's like, Mom, you know you got to watch the clock. And she's right, I do. My husband and I just went to the Cove in Asheville where Billy Graham's little museum, and they have like 1,200 or 1,500 acres there, and it's a retreat place for people to come in and do Bible studies and all this different stuff. And we had never stopped there, and it's a beautiful little chapel. And they had a pulpit, one of Billy Graham's traveling pulpits. And on that pulpit that they would travel with, it had three different lights on it that gave him a 15-minute warning, a 10-minute warning, and a 5-minute warning. I was like, I need to take that with me. So, okay, so my story begins, it's kind of hard to tell a story. I have a very unusual story, and there's a story that says hindsight is 20/20, and you can look back and understand a lot more. Or there's the story of where you are and work your way through it. And I thought, where do I start? Do I start here where we are? But I'm going to start at the beginning, because I think it's best to walk you through the emotions that the Lord, that I dealt with at the time. I will have to start with 2008. And my little girl, Macy, was a nursing baby, and she was cutting teeth and bit me a little bit when I was nursing her, and which was no big deal. Babies do that, except that it got infected, and I got mastitis really bad from it, and a red streak went all the way up over my shoulder. Got some antibiotics. I had to go to the doctor. Thought we had it taken care of, but from that point on, I started having some really weird symptoms. Like feeling like a little electric shocks over me, extreme fatigue, feeling that I just could not get with it, you know, just mom stuff. But finally, it was so noticeably different. Stuff that when I would try to shower my hair and wash my hair, if I closed my eyes, I would fall over into the shower wall. So just weird stuff that you're like, that ain't right. I said, I need to go to the doctor. I've had 5 children. I need vitamins. That is what I need. So I go to the doctor, tell him I need vitamins, and he runs my blood work, and he said, you don't need vitamins. Everything is great. He said, but I'm going to send you to a neurologist because I'm worried you have MS. And I'm like, what is MS? He said, well, we'll just send you to the neurologist and see. So I go to the neurologist, and they did a brain MRI, because I guess that's what they do looking for MS. And they said, no, everything's fine. I'm like, okay. So they're like, well, we're going to send you to another neurologist. Okay. So we go to another neurologist. They did another brain MRI. Nope, it's fine. They look for this stuff in your blood work and all this stuff. I ended up seeing 3 different neurologists over that time. One of them was actually in Cincinnati. Ohio's where my husband pastored at the time. And she was an MS specialist, and they did. She was looking for everything. She's like, you do not have MS. I don't know what's going on at the time. They're like, half of them are like, we think maybe you do, and it's just hard to diagnose, but we don't really know. Well, in the meantime, some of my symptoms were kind of getting worse. I was feeling like if I went to Walmart, if I walked around at all, I'm a country girl, and you ever wade creeks with rapids in it, and you try to walk up the rapids, you know, that resistance? That's how I felt. Like, the longer I was up, I just felt this resistance, like, I can't go through with it. Well, in the meantime, the one neurologist said to me, have you and your husband considered having any more children? And we already had 5 children. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm fine with that. We love children, and we collect them. And... hey, you get to take them to heaven. They say you can't take your things with you. You can take your children. So there you go. It's a good thing to collect. And so he said, well, sometimes with women that have MS, if we think you're just, we think that's what it is, but you're just really hard to diagnose, then if you get pregnant, then many times that will throw, is anybody familiar with MS? I have friends now with MS. So this is the truth. This is a true thing that many women, when they're pregnant, their symptoms get so much better. Like, many women with MS say they feel their best when they're pregnant. So he said, so if you're thinking you would have more children, I would like for you to do that if you can. And yeah, that put that on my calendar. So we go. So I got pregnant with Elisha, our 6th baby. And, but I didn't start getting better. It started getting worse. And so, they were just, the doctors were just like, we don't know. We just don't know. And so it was kind of a wait and see thing. So it started getting, I was feeling worse and worse and worse. And I remember that Christmas of 2008, I slept like I couldn't even stay awake. Like I was just, I mean, that's how fatigued I was. I think I remember barely the kids opening their gifts and I was conked. I just was horrible. I felt horrible. And, I remember one time trying to drive to Walmart and I went to put my foot on the brake and my foot would not go. Like it was a delay. It went, but it was too long of a delay and it scared me to death. So that was it. I'm not driving anymore, Jimmy. I cannot drive. It scared me. So those are the things that were happening. Well, fast forward to March of 2009. And my husband was at the house, and our assistant pastor and his wife were at the house, and my husband and the assistant pastor was going to go do some visitation. And I was feeling really bad that day. And I can only describe it like my body. You ever stood beside a refrigerator with the motor running and feel the motor through the refrigerator? I felt like, I would tell my husband all the time, put your hand on me, I am vibrating. And he would say, you're not vibrating. And I'm like, I am. I just felt internally. I constantly was buzzing and vibrating. And it felt like I love doing handyman remodel work. And I would put my, like if you ever change a light socket and you barely shock yourself, I felt like that's, I was just being shocked all over. That particular day, I was in a tremendous amount of pain. And I said to him, how long do you think you're going to be gone? And he's like, well, I don't know. Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'll be okay. Because, you know, I didn't want to keep him from visitation. That's important. And, but my assistant pastor's wife was there and I almost asked him not to go. I was feeling that bad, but I thought, no, it's okay. He needs to go. So he had not been out the door 5 minutes and I thought that was a bad idea. So I said to my assistant pastor's wife, I'm so sorry, Joy, but would you mind keeping an eye on the kids? I just need to go lay down and take a nap. And she said, no, go ahead. So I went and lay down. I did not wake up for 24 more hours. And my husband, I know you're like, what was with your husband? Was he dead? Why didn't he wake you up? But he just thought I was really exhausted. And that was a particular, that was a Wednesday. I laid down around noon. So there was church that night. He just thought, let her sleep. And then when he came home from church, I was still asleep. So, you know, there was a natural progression. But he said, by lunchtime the next day, I'm thinking she should not be sleeping this much. Well, when I woke up, I was completely paralyzed. Like there was no feeling or no movement from about my chest down. My arms, I could move them, but everything felt very delayed and slow. Anyway, fast forward, lots of doctor's visits, hospital visits. They could not do an MRI at that time because if they tried to put me in that machine, I would pass out cold. The baby, I was 5 months pregnant by then. The baby, I don't know if he was laying funny, but they tried. I'm telling you, I promise you, one time they had me on a backboard duct taped. They had duct tape all around me trying to get me in that MRI machine at crooked angles, and I would just bottom out, start passing out, and they'd have to pull me out. So we could not even do another MRI. They had only done brain MRIs. They had never done a spine MRI until after. So I could not even have any more MRIs until after the baby was born, which was 4 more months. So they wouldn't do any therapy. They said the only thing they could do was steroids. Because anytime something goes down like that, they're like, load them up with steroids. But I was 5 months pregnant. And I heard the OB doctor and the neurologist having a fight. And the OB doctor, the neurologist saying, we've got to take this baby so we can treat the mom. And the OB doctor said, it's too early. He's only 20 weeks. That it's too early. And the neurologist like, but we've got to take the baby to treat the mom. And I said, y'all might as well just stop your fussing right now. The baby's going to stay where the baby is. So that there was nothing they could do. We just had to wait. After the baby was born, then I had to have a C-section and I blew, the whole right side of my C-section blew out. I had a hematoma in the hospital. I was in the hospital 8 days and a whole hematoma blew out. So then I ended up going home with wound care, a hospital bed in the living room for 3 months, home health care coming in. We have 6 children now, 9 and under, a brand new tiny baby. And that's why I think it's so important that her side of the story is heard, because she was the oldest at that time. And I have a husband that could cook ramen noodles and that's about his limitation. And we had no family. We lived in Ohio, and we had no family around us. All of our families were in Tennessee, and they just weren't able to come, I guess. And so it was just us and our church. And our church was so precious. If it hadn't been for our assistants at the time, God knew when to send them into our lives. But they just held it together, you know. And we were so thankful for people that loved us and gave us time to go to the hospitals and the doctors and multitudes of appointments and therapy, and the story goes on and on. And then I end up having to go to Cleveland Clinic. And Cleveland Clinic, by October, I had to recover from all that. So in October, they sent me to Cleveland Clinic. We were there 8 days. They ran all these tests, and they said, "Miss Reagan, we think a virus." Oh, I forgot to tell you. 2 days before I woke up paralyzed, I had pink eye. The kids had pink eye. I got pink eye. And they said, "We believe a virus has attacked your spinal cord, and the swelling has damaged your spinal cord. We see your damage at the C5, C7 level. But we can't know for sure what it is unless we biopsy that spinal cord, and we don't do that when you're alive. So we can't tell you what that virus is." Well, I'm thankful for that. I'm glad they didn't do that. I like being alive. So they never said the words transverse myelitis. They just said, "That's what we think." So we really went to Cleveland Clinic looking for answers, and we found out a lot of things it was not, but we still came out with question marks. And that was kind of a hard thing for me to go through. And because I developed then a lot of anxiety, like I was afraid to go to sleep. And if I got a toothache, I would tell my doctors, "You know, at this point, I'm afraid if I have an earache, I'm going to die." You know, because you never know what happened in your body and what your body did to you. So it led to a lot of anxiety. And that's when you really learn to fall into the arms of Jesus. And I want to give her time to say, and I want to conclude with a few Bible verses that really helped me. But for after Cleveland Clinic, then I went through a year of therapy. We put 500 miles a week on our van to drive to Cincinnati from where we lived in rural Ohio, and did a lot of therapy. I got a little return. My arms and hands are stronger. If I get really tired, I wimp out. But I really should be very limited with a spinal cord injury. It's a high-level spinal cord injury, very similar to Johnny, actually. I think she's a C6 spinal cord injury. But mine was considered non-traumatic spinal cord injury. And I'm like, really? Because that felt pretty traumatic to me. But it wasn't caused by a gunshot or a car wreck or anything, so they call it that. So I don't have rods, I don't have to have surgery, anything like that. So I'm considered an incomplete, so I'm weird. I'm a weird person. So I have some sensation issues in my hands. If I get really tired, I can't open my hand all the way. So a few little deficits like that. My triceps are very weak, my biceps are strong. Just weird. The spinal cord is really funky. But I really don't have much movement or sensation from my chest down. So, but I'm thankful. I am thankful. It could have been a lot worse. I could have died. I know I've met people that are on ventilators and all kinds of things. So God has been very good to us. It's been a learning curve for our family. But go ahead and tell your side of it.
Okay. Well, my name is Briley, and I am the oldest of six children, and I was 10 when she became paralyzed, and that was a very trying time for us. My younger siblings, I had four younger, and then the fifth was born, but they didn't understand. They were young, and I was young too, but people teased me that I was born an old woman because I've always just been very serious and take things very literal, so I really understood right away what was going on, and I knew the test they'd done, and we thought she had MS, so really, they thought that when she woke up paralyzed, they thought that that was probably a flare-up of MS and that it would go away soon. So, you know, when they told us about it, initially, I remember the day that she woke up paralyzed. Me and my siblings were in our basement at the time. We were supposed to be cleaning, which seemed like a never-ending thing down there. But we were cleaning, and my dad called us up, and they'd been together for a long time that morning. They hadn't come out. We knew she wasn't feeling well. And when she finally came out, Dad called us up, and she was just sitting in the chair, and I remember her sitting really funny. It looked funny to me how she was sitting, and they told us that she woke up with no feeling that morning, and it instantly hit me, like it scared me, and I remember my little siblings just running back downstairs, and I went back down, and I was like, "Guys, do you know what this means? Mom can't walk," and they're just, "Yeah, we know." They didn't know what was going on, and it just hit me, and then with time, you know, as time progressed, like she said, I don't know if she mentioned, but it took 3 years for her to get that final diagnosis. So we spent 3 years not really knowing what it was. And so as the oldest kid, I felt very responsible for my younger siblings, especially the youngest one, Elisha, because she had so many health complications when he was born that he's very close to me. He still is. He's almost 10 now, and he's still very close to me. But whenever, you know, all this happened, I really just felt very motherly towards my siblings, like I just had to be there for them. So because we didn't know, you know, I would lay at night thinking, I remember, and she talks about the anxiety she dealt with, and I dealt with a lot of it too, but I never said anything about it because, you know, I had to be strong for the kids because I was just always, I lived in a lot of fear though, because we didn't know what it was. We didn't know if one day she'd wake up and she'd be dead. We didn't know if it'd come back. We didn't know what it was. So it was a constant fear and a constant, I always felt like I had to be prepared for the worst. And so I probably developed a lot of like unhealthy coping patterns at that time, because anything bad that happens, you automatically assume the worst is going to happen because that had happened once. So even small things, a little inconvenience happens and your mind instantly goes to the worst possible scenario, and that's what's going to happen. That's what you have to prepare for. So I dealt with a lot of anxiety at that time and feeling, you know, really afraid all the time. And that really carried through. And I probably still deal with it sometimes, just, you know, feeling like I instantly just my mind goes to the worst place. But so with that, through my, you know, young teenage years, we transitioned from Ohio. We lived there for 10 years. So I did a lot of my growing up there. And I think I was 14 when we left there. And so that's like a really rough time to move to, because you're, you know, you're just making friends and you're entering your teenage years. So it was just a really, it was a rough time for me through my young teenage years. And I got in some really dark places, but, you know, I would try to cope with things through all of the wrong ways. And that's something we wanted to talk about today. But it only comes back to Jesus. That's the only way that you can truly find. Because I know a lot of people, especially as women, you deal with a lot of anxiety. Everybody has anxiety issues. So it's not unique to me. And I realized that with, you know, branching out and starting to talk to people and reading some really good books. And I realized that, you know, it's not just me, because I'd never talked about it. I just always stayed so quiet. It wasn't just me that was scared. A lot of people deal with things like this. So what can we do to get through that? And that's something we wanted to talk about today. But, you know, I would feel so scared. And my mom, and I remember she would sing this song to us when we were really, really little. And I think it started out the first time I remember her singing this song to us. We had a tornado warning and we were all really scared that a tornado was going to come. And it was just this simple song, "When I am afraid, I will trust in him." And I remember I'd feel like really overwhelmed by something. And I would just like, my mind would go back to that little song from when I was little. And I would just think, you know, as much as this scares me and I want to put this on me and take it for the whole family, I don't have to, because I am a Christian and I can put that load on Jesus and he will carry that for me. And so no matter all these things that I tried to make me happy and to not be scared and to just constantly distract myself from things I was afraid of, that if when I, you know, I would never feel any kind of comfort, maybe for a few minutes or a few days or a few weeks, you'd be distracted. But until you got to the heart issue, and I'm not really fully trusting Jesus with my life until I take my fears and anxieties and put it in his hands and let him just handle that for me. So I still deal with that, but I just have to remind myself, you know, that Jesus is there no matter how overwhelmed and scared I get about things. And still sometimes, I mean, her health is in a great place now, but I still worry about her. Actually, we tease all the time. We love being together, and I actually got hired by the government to be her caretaker. So I'm with her all the time. And so I still, and it's really, you know, it's taught me though. I gained a love for the medical field going through that. So I'm in school to be a nurse now. And so there have been some really good things that have come from it. And so I know where God was working, and I've been able to see through my life how God has worked her story into blessing so many other people. So it makes sense. And like she said, hindsight's 20/20, you know, it makes sense later. And, you know, there's still times where you wonder, why do we have to deal with this as good Christian people? Why do we have to go through this? But then you see all the people, the lives she has changed just with her story, Christ working through her. I know she has had friends that have been in, you know, had disabilities and gotten really dark places, considering suicide. And she, just with her story and her story of Christ, has been able to help me. I've been able to help people. I work with kids with disabilities in the summer, and I get to work with their families and other siblings and family members and how to deal with something that traumatic happening in your family. And we were really blessed that we didn't have, you know, a super, like, her injury was not, you know, she didn't have to spend a lot of time in the hospital. She did some, but she wasn't injured. It was something that happened. So we are blessed in that way. There's always someone worse than you, they say that. But, you know, it really teaches you a lot. And so dealing with all that anxiety, and she did too, and she'll go more into depth in how she dealt with a lot of stuff and some verses that really helped us through. But I just wanted to talk about that today, because I know that sometimes as family members, you worry about people and you worry about things, and that can just get really overwhelming sometimes. So I'm going to let her go back and explain some of the verses that we would read through as a family and that she got through to help her through some things.
We're doing good. It's 9:35. Yeah, I know, right? Like, we were like practicing. Good job. Well, I think there's some scriptures that really I had to cling to. I think, tell me your name again. Yes. Heather, we were talking last night, and she's like, she was sharing some of her story. The Lord's helped her through, and she was saying sometimes you hear philosophy, and then you hear, oh, we're all better, and you're like, how did you make that? How did you bridge that gap, right? So yeah, God is good. Yeah, God is there, and yeah, God's a present help. Okay, great. Plug it in for me. I'm a very practical plug it in, because if we can't apply it, you've lost me. It's like, sometimes it feels like raw theology. It goes down like a carrot, you know? So let's puree it and add some brown sugar and make a pumpkin pie out of this or something. Anxiety and control. I think that's two of the biggest things. I lost so much control over, I remember her bringing, honey, we need to cook. So here's my hospital bed. Here's this little tiny baby there. And he is so cute with her. He's like, now, mama, you know I love you, but she's my second mama, too. I'm like, I know, Elisha. We've talked about that, haven't we? But they have a really precious relationship, and I do love that. I could not have went through that without Briley. Anxiety would hit me a lot in the night. I wouldn't even be dwelling on it, but I would wake up gasping for air, you know. And sometimes I still do that, and I don't even think about it. But I think there's something deep in my brain that says, "Don't go to sleep." And I don't understand all of psychology. It's there though, and so. When that happens, I used to panic. Like, if I would wake up gasping for air, I think, what's going on? What's the matter? And you have this panic attack. And when you have a panic attack, then you're convinced something's wrong. And if they say, what are your symptoms? You're like, I don't even know, but I'm dying. That I know. Why are you dying? I don't know. I used to tell my husband, you've got to take me in the emergency room. He's like, okay, what's the matter? I'm like, I don't know. Something's bad wrong. Okay. What are your symptoms? I don't know. I just, you know, and I really did. And I didn't even know I was having panic attacks. My mother-in-law finally said, have you considered you might have panic attacks? I'm like, what is that? I don't even know. And I looked it up, and like all the symptoms I had, like everything but two. And I was really relieved about that, if you want to know the truth. That made me think, oh, I would rather think I'm dying and not be. I have a weird brain. Than to really be dying. And I used to tell myself, seriously, you are not dying. You are fine. Girl, you are fine. Get your mind off this. You are fine. And I would brainwash myself with that until I would calm back down. But in the middle of the night, it's hard to calm down. And I can only wake my husband up so many times, you know, and I started feeling guilty about that. Like, I'm freaking out over here, you know. He was always so wonderful, never complained. But I was feeling like a big baby about it. Like, really? But I tell you the passage of scripture that just has clung to me, and that's Matthew chapter 6, verses 25 through 34. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to read it, but you can write it down. But you know the passage. It's the passage where Jesus is talking about considering the lilies of the field and the sparrows. He knows when they fall. And then he makes this comment. How many of, and I'm paraphrasing, okay? But how many of you, by worrying, can make yourself a little bit taller? That's really what he's saying, isn't it? How many of you, by worrying, can put one more hair on your head? Why are you worrying for tomorrow? Tomorrow's going to just be tomorrow. It's going to take care of itself. And I have clung to that. Do you know that I will not live a minute longer, nor will I die a minute sooner than what has already been appointed unto me before I was even born? It is appointed unto man once to die. It's not by accident. It's not because somebody's not going to call the ambulance quick enough, Alicia. It's not because they're going to wake up and you're dead in the bed. Honestly, those are the things that went through my mind. I struggle with that as a Christian. If I love Jesus, oh, I hear these people. I can't wait to get to heaven. Really? Because you start having a heart attack right now, you're going to be yelling for somebody to call 911. Don't even tell me that. I'll be like, you are a liar. You are a liar. You're all healthy. That's why you want to go to heaven. You start suffering, you're going to be like, I'm fine with earth. Just make me better. So, but I struggle with that. Like, I must be a lousy Christian. I'm like, no, I'm not. God came to give us life, and he came to give it to us abundantly, and he put it in our nature that he created us to cling to life. We all have survival in us. That is an instinct given by God. It's okay, Lisha, to want to live. You can still love Jesus and not want to check out and go to heaven today. It's okay. So I had to come to peace with that because I really struggle with that. But that anxiety that hits you, and there were times I would just say, Jesus, would you just come lay next to me and hug me? Please, please just hug me. I am freaking out right now. And I just need you to comfort me. And I kid you not, time after time after time, I will be laying there praying. And that's the last thing I remember. I'd wake up in the morning. He did. He did. I don't know what else to do. I'm worrying to death. I can't stop this if I'm dying, and I can't, it's just out of my control. And I think we struggle with that, ladies. We're all control freaks, and we need to know how to manage this. And it's just like, no, you cannot manage this. I love you, Lisha. Your life is in my hands. You're going to have to trust me. And we can trust him. What about answers? I need answers. I told you Cleveland Clinic. We finally did. I finally got sent to Ohio State University to a neuroimmunologist. And his name was Dr. Aaron Boster. And he, this about 3 years later, so all those times she was talking about, you're just left with what happened, what really happened. I know what they say might have happened, but what really happened? And he said he had MRIs in his office. He did an MRI. And he said, did a whole examination. He said, come back tomorrow, I'll read your MRIs, come back tomorrow. We came back and they said, you're classic transverse myelitis. And basically that's a description. Transverse meaning it goes across the spinal cord, and myelitis means it hits the myelination, blah, blah, blah. So it's a lot of medical jingo that I don't know all that, but basically the swelling caused that. They think the car accident I had knocked my teeth out, put a weak spot in my neck. They think the infection from 2008 kind of just hovered around there and never really got cleaned up. And they think the pink eye finished it off. So kind of a series of unfortunate events. But God knew every one of those things. And you go back and say, well, we should have. I wish we would have. Did we? No. God knew, and he orchestrated it. So looking for answers was Hebrew 4:14-16. When I want answers, and that's where we come boldly to the throne, and we're promised we'll obtain mercy and grace. We are not told we will get answers. We are said, you come to the answer. You need me. I'm your answer, Lisha. And I promise you mercy, and I promise you grace every time you come boldly to the throne. So when I start thinking, I want answers, I think, and you got it. You go talk to him. He is your answer. Healing, Daniel 3:15-18. I got a whole lesson on this. You don't even want me to get on faith and healing because it is a false doctrine taught in our churches. But that's another time. The three Hebrew children about to be thrown in the fire. The king said, if you do not bow down this time, I'm telling you, you boys are going to that fire. And they said, you know what? We know our God is able to deliver us. But if not, we are not bowing down. Getting me out of a wheelchair is not even miracle status to God Almighty. He created a world in 6 days by speaking it. You think getting me out of this is a problem? So if he can and doesn't, why? Is that not the question? Because he knows what he needs to do for my life to glorify him the most. And if he says, you stay seated right there, then I'm to say, I know you're able, but if not, I will serve you anyway. And it's up to him. And then fulfillment. My life verse for a long time, when I went to Bible college, Pastor Clarence Sexton said, find a life verse, kids, find a life verse. So we prayed about it. What God help you find a life verse. And I was led to Isaiah chapter 12, verse 3. This is back when I'm 18 years old. Therefore, with joy shall you draw water out of the wells of salvation. And as I have lived my life, that has been a precious verse. Therefore, with joy shall you draw water out of the wells of salvation. Where is our refreshment? Our salvation. As long as we have Jesus, everything else can go wrong. But we can still have the joy of the Lord because of our salvation. When you look in a mirror, you say, is he enough? And that's a hard question to answer, honestly. But when you get to a place to say, yes, he is, you will have the joy of the Lord. Because no longer do our externals drive our internal. He is enough. And he is the joy of the Lord. And that is our strength. So we are done. Good job. Thank you so much. Thank you.